Alan Bean, you are backup command pilot for the Gemini 10 flight. Would you tell us just a bit about yourself, since you're one of the more recent additions to the astronaut crew, I'm sure to most of our listeners anyway.
Yes, I was born in Wheeler, Texas. My hometown's Fort Worth, Texas, and I went to the University of Texas, so I'm fairly consistent there. Even married a Texas girl.
Did you? Well, that's not too far from the manned space center, is it?
No, in fact, I think that's one of the reasons my wife liked the fact I was selected when she'd be near home.
As an astronaut?
Yeah.
So she'd be near home even if you are off somewhere in orbit.
That's right. In fact, that's one of the changes that we've made in our life since we've come here is we're gone so much that a lot of the things that we used to do together and a lot of the responsibilities that I used to take care of, she has to take care of now.
Well, you have children?
Yes, we do. We have two. We got a little boy that's 11 and a little girl that's about 3, and so she usually has her hands full with those.
Mm-hmm. You said you went to the University of Texas. What was your major? What did you specialize in?
Studied aeronautical engineering there. I'd always planned to be a naval aviator, and so I chose aeronautical engineering. I was in the NROTC unit there, and when I left, I went to flight training. Went down to an attack squadron in Patuxent River as a test pilot, and then from there is when I was selected mm-hmm. for the astronaut program.
Well, as a test pilot, how did you view the transition moving from planes to spacecraft?
That's one of the things that kind of puzzled me a little bit before I came down here, just how much did a spacecraft fly like an airplane, and strangely enough, a lot of the things are remarkably similar. It's same sort of skills are required, looking at gauges, moving the hand, moving the spacecraft or the airplane in response to these gauges, yet there are a lot of things a little bit more complex about flying spacecraft. They don't tend, for example, to point into the wind, which airplanes do, and so you run into some problems pointing them the right direction, and of course in our particular business where we're doing a lot of experiments and a lot of things along that line, there's a lot of background study to be performed to get you up to speed to be able to perform these scientific experiments and some of the other things that don't really, let's say, aren't really applicable to airplane flying.
Won't you say that aren't really applicable? Give me the word a little clearer. And I'll splice them together.
Yeah, that aren't really applicable to airplane flying.
Well, since you came into the astronaut program in 1963, what have you been doing? What have been your assignments?
The first year or so, once you're selected, is devoted to kind of a basic training phase where you learn things like orbital mechanics, astronomy, physics of reentry, all these things that that you need to know to perform the job once you start being assigned to flight crew. After that, you're assigned to some sort of specialty area. In my case, it was recovery systems, where you work with the engineers to ensure that the systems, when they are finally completed, are completely compatible with the man that's going to operate them. In other words, you look at the switches in the cockpit to see if they're the type you need, if they're placed properly, if they do the functions you want to do. Following this, I was assigned to a flight crew, and for the last 6 months, C.C. Williams, who's flying with me, have been working steadily at this assignment.
Thank you very much. Alan Bean, United States astronaut. Okay, that's 3:45. Now let me do that while you're sitting here.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. All right.
Okay, C.C.
He can drink his coffee.
He didn't hear my comeback on the reason. I got a buddy who has to be called A.D. because he'll kill me if I ever call him Asbury.
Clifton in that way.
No, it's not that way. You're not again it, are you?
No. They call my dad Cliff.
Oh, and they differentiate.
So they call me Curtis when I grew up, and I guess I just didn't look like a Curtis when I went to Marine.
Well, you know, I used my.
Everybody started
calling me CC. 3:45 on the Bean Take One. Alan Bean, as backup command pilot for the Gemini 10 flight, you've particularly been concerned with watching that Agena, haven't you? Haven't you spent some time in monitoring the preparations for it, the rendezvous craft?
Yes, most of us have had to spend quite a little time working with the engineers and the designers of the Agena so that we can understand the systems that are there and best understand how to utilize the propulsion systems that it has to our best advantage for maneuvering in orbit, for changing our orbit, and for, as you mentioned, making the rendezvous that we're going to have to make.
Well, as we are here at this moment, waiting for that Agena to get into orbit, that's when we'll use the tape.
Okay.
Would you describe something about the systems on board the craft and how it's to be used?
Yes, the reason we have an Agena, of course, or put one in the program, is to develop the procedures, one, for rendezvousing with another vehicle. But probably more important than that is once we've rendezvoused, to use the propulsion system that it has to maneuver about and thus increase the operational capability of the man in the spacecraft. Now, the Agena is composed of, first of all, let's say, a attitude control system that will maneuver it to certain directions, hold it there, and then allow the propulsion system to operate to then maneuver it. The propulsion system consists of three different levels of propulsion, one about 16 pounds of thrust, one of around 200 pounds of thrust, and then the big engine will produce about 16,000 pounds of thrust. With these three levels of power, levels of thrust, we're able to burn about any magnitude of thrust that we're interested in, and so adjust orbits for big changes, little changes, and this gives us quite a capability.
Well, outside of the fact that it's just a target, something there in orbit to meet up and to rendezvous with in space, there's the great value in having additional power and propulsion with which to move the Gemini craft around once you've docked, right?
Right, and of course this is the key thing. We can get together with it. I might mention here one. We have the capability aboard the Gemini spacecraft to change our speed by about 900 feet per second. This is about, let's say.
How much is 900 feet per second?
Can you do it in kilometers?
No, 900.
900 feet is 300 meters a second. Say 300 meters a second. That's roughly. You divide it in three, roughly, just a little less. It's 0.3048 meters. And we use metric for overseas anyway. So say about 300 meters per second.
Okay, if that's going to be 300 meters per second, then we're going to have to divide the 25 by 3 and come out with about 800. 800, okay. 300.
All right, back up to the start of that thought then.
All right.
Let's keep going.
All right. On board the spacecraft, we have the propulsive capability of changing our speed by about 300 meters per second. Now, with the Agena attached, we not only have the same 300 meters per second, but we have an additional 800 meters per second. So you can see we more than triple the original capability that we had, and it, of course, gives us quite a bit of added capability. I better say this, it does more than triple it.
It does more than triple it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can scratch
right.
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
my math was okay.
All right, yeah. All right, let's see. Now, anything else we ought to add on the Agena just to sort of tie this one up in a knot? This is just a little...
You might say, what's the difference between, if you're going to do this then, what's the difference between the two Agenas we're using?
Okay.
In other words, the 8 to 10 or something like that.
Well, Al, what's the difference between Gemini 10's Agena and that Gemini 8 Agena that's up in orbit already waiting?
The difference between these two is the fact that the 8 Agena has been there for some time, and the battery system and the attitude control system has depleted and is no longer operational. Because of this, it is essentially a dead target or a dead vehicle just floating around in space.
We use the term passive, don't we?
Yeah, passive is a better one, I guess, than dead target, but it has no operational systems. Our reason for wanting to go up there and look at it, of course, is one, to effect a rendezvous with a passive target, and second, there are some experiments on the Agena that we'd like to retrieve, and also some experiments that we'd like to place on that Agena for possible later pickup.
Mm-hmm. Well, overall, then, you say that the Agena is a very valuable tool in this Gemini program in development of space skills.
Very much so. It's certainly one of the four or five prime
systems, pieces of equipment, or developments.
Ask me the question again.
Right. Certainly, it's one of the question.
Most important phases of the. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, then the Agena is definitely one of the most important parts of the Gemini development program, isn't it?
It certainly is, because using the Agena, we're able to effect maneuvers, go places we couldn't otherwise go, and certainly we're able to take a look at big propulsion systems in space and see how they operate, so that at some later time when we need this sort of a thing, maybe not in the Agena, but something similar for trips to the moon or trips to Mars or something like that, we'll have a background of knowledge as to how they operate, how they should be built, how you should rendezvous with them, and in general, the techniques that could best be employed to utilize these large propulsion systems.
Thank you very much, Alan Bean, backup command pilot for the Gemini 10 flight.